Tonight on Standing Room Only, part two of Student Stories.
Welcome to Standing Room Only, featuring lectures, town hall meetings, and other public forums recorded on location by WFHB community volunteers. This program amplifies voices not adequately represented in mainstream media to help raise public consciousness of issues affecting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
In early April, a group of students taught by Rachel Barr at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship told their stories. Their themes range from a robbery in Zambia to making the most of birthdays. In the first half of the show, we'll hear from Dylan Stickles, Willow Krugel, Scott Pollock, and Emily Burnfield. We begin today's show with Dylan Stickles' story about the importance of tragedy and comedy in life.
So, I'm sure you've all heard, the formula for comedy is tragedy plus time. But I've learned in like the last 2 years that you can take out time and the formula works pretty much the same. It's a lot harder, but it works. And, just going to stand here for a moment while I think. I remember the fact. Nope, I don't remember that, actually. What's the next line? Oh, yeah. Wish I had known what comedy was capable of fixing whenever my life was enveloped in tragedy. My parents got divorced a long time ago, it feels like, but it was only a few years ago, really. And it kind of ruined my whole mood for a few years. But I found out since that, again, tragedy can equal comedy very easily. And if I had known what comedy is capable of fixing, I would have seen the hilarity of the situation that was my life at the time, and I would have seen that my family separation was really just going to bring us all closer. And, So, later, a little bit later, my mom told me that she is a lesbian, and it kind of, it shocked me a little bit, and it made me a little disappointed, and it just hurt real bad, because, like, my entire life, my mom had been telling me I could tell her anything, yet she couldn't share this very, very basic information with me. And like I said, that hurt really bad, and it stuck with me for months, and I kind of hid out from the world, and I I used to hide under beds so I wouldn't have to go to school. I used to, I'd go to my parents' room and I'd hide under the bed so nobody would be able to find me. And that's how I got out of going to school for a few days. I didn't stay for like 3 days, but still. Basically, the night my mom told me that she's gay, I was watching this stand-up special. I don't remember what it was, but I was watching one, as I do. Like, I have a whole Pandora playlist that's dedicated just to comedy that's playing all the time. So I'm always listening to comedy. I'm always trying to extract comedy out of every situation. And that's actually where I got the perspective that got me to move on from this terrible, awful person that I was, that was depressed all the time. And I felt guilty because I was depressed, because I couldn't do anything and want to do anything. And so I was listening to the stand-up special by Louis C.K. And in it, he talks about how whenever a baby cries on airplanes, people are so selfish that they really, they listen to the baby crying, and they think it's happening to them instead of, if you look at the parents, you can tell they don't want their baby to be crying on a plane either, because it's disrupting everybody. But there's nothing you can do about it. It's just a small human thing to cry. And that kind of stuck with me for a few weeks. I was thinking, it's a funny joke, and I was thinking all the time, I was alone all the time. And it's whenever I realized that my mom coming out wasn't really my situation. It was It's hers. And I felt, that's another thing I feel guilty about still to this day, is that I was thinking that I was the main character of my mom's coming out story, when in reality I was just the side character that was supposed to be there to support her, yet I was making her life extremely difficult at the time. And like I said, it stuck with me for a couple months, and that's ultimately, I realized just out of the blue, I think I was in class, that the life's problems aren't on my shoulders. And not if anybody in here thinks they're on their shoulders, they're not either. It's the whole world gets to deal with the problems, not just you. And and this opened like this whole new door to school of thought that I started looking at. And this school of thought really is that, like you said, the world's problems aren't mine, and I can try to mend them. They're not my wounds to fix, though. And so I started diving deep into comedy, which that's where I am now. I'm still looking into things, and I studied the mastery works of different comedians like Carlin and CK and Cosby. Well, not really Cosby anymore. I don't take life advice from him. But yeah, and I realized that, you know, even if life is synonymous with tragedy, it's you just have to live it. Life is there. You got to go out and live it. And I also realized that life without tragedy turns you into a dull, boring person. And this is the same kind of person that would hand out carrots on Halloween. And nobody wants to be that guy.
Next up, we're going to have Willow Krugel with her story, Fictional Escapes. Willow is a student who loves writing and getting lost in fictional worlds. Willow.
Reality is not always pretty. I'm sure we all know that. Between the stresses of school, jobs, family problems, etc., the real world is not exactly a friendly playground. And that's why we look for ways to escape when life decides to rear its ugly head. My way of escaping is by going off to my own world, which is filled with other fictional worlds and characters, as well as ones I create. Finding a way to escape reality is something that is very important to me, because if I didn't have a way to get away from the anxiety that comes with GPAs or the last-minute deadline panic that comes with every project, I would probably lose my mind. For example, say I'm at home working on a biology project on cell division. I don't really understand how centrioles assist in cell division. The resources I've been provided with aren't helping. Not even Google can find the reliable information I need. Never a good sign. And I don't understand how I'm going to present the information once I finally do find it. So I start blaming myself for not asking for help earlier in class, and the whole thing turns into a cycle. Now I need to step away for a moment and take a break. I need a way to block out reality, who is blaming me for not being smart or responsible enough. I need to get away from the confusion that school and centrioles are plaguing my mind with, and the cycle of self-doubt that's returned yet again. So, instead of chasing after answers that are nowhere to be found, I do a bit of free writing. I write a rhyming poem, and as I write each line, I have no idea what I'm going to write for the next line. As I continue to write, a little scenario is created in my head, and a concept starts to reveal itself, and this scenario becomes another part of my little world of solace. The final product is not a tale of bunny rabbits and rainbows. It's pretty dark, but I don't mind at all. I'm just happy to be creating something like this without the pressure of deadlines and grades. To be in this situation where the only person that has to be happy with it is me. For now, I no longer have to worry about the difference between mitosis and meiosis, or the access certification exam that I procrastinated studying for too long. I enter a world where no one will judge me for liking darker themes, grades aren't breathing down my neck, and I'm content with myself and who I am. This is how I escape. This is how I find peace. Eventually, though, it's time for me to reluctantly pull myself out of my own world and back to reality. Now I need to study for the certification exam or look up a YouTube video on cell division. And then I remember I'm covering the introduction of our presentation as well. The previous sense of relief is now beginning to fade. As much as I wish I could remain in my own world most of the time, I can't. So instead I use it as my way of escaping. However, in a way, it also plays into my life in reality. Without it, I'd be left with nothing but the cold, bitter shadows of negativity that come with stress and self-doubt. I'd have no way to escape. I'd have no way to find peace within myself. However, one problem that I have is my way of not only escaping stress but running from it. I'll do anything I can to get away from the pressures of reality, and I'll often put what I want to do over what I have to do. This often results in things like procrastination. As far as me finding a way to resolve this, well, it hasn't been resolved yet. And that's okay. I'm just 15 years old. I'm just an average freshman in high school, so I can't yet relate to people who tell big, life-changing stories about college, jobs and careers, paying bills, etc. I'm still trying to find something I enjoy doing enough to do it in an environment that includes deadlines and can be stressful. But I'm glad I have this way of escaping. I'm perfectly content with not remaining in reality 24/7 because that's all right.
Now we have Scott Pollock. Scott Pollock is a 15-year-old student who enjoys running, biking, and playing video games. He does cross-country with his friends after school. Scott's title is Robbed in Zambia.
My family lived in Zambia until I was around 8 years old, and my parents had moved there before I was born to assist in a teaching project that was happening at the time. So we lived in a smaller village around an hour away from any of the bigger towns, which were Lusaka and Kabwe. So eventually my parents had run out of stuff to do in the smaller village. So we decided to move to Kabwe to work there. Now in Kabwe, robbery was always kind of an imminent threat. So most houses would have a wall. And when I say wall, I don't mean like a picket fence to keep your dog in. I mean a big 10-foot cinder block wall with glass on the top. And in addition to this, they'd have a guard dog and metal bars over the windows. So since we had recently moved there, we didn't have a dog yet, and our wall had a corner where it had chipped down or something that eroded, so it didn't have glass there so people could climb over. So it's perfectly safe, right? Okay, so one night, my brother and I were playing out in the living room, and we heard our mom yell from down the hallway in front of my bedroom. My brother, dad, and I all ran to her, and we saw three men who had climbed through the window who all had guns. One of them took my mom, brother, and I into the kitchen and made us sit down, while the other two asked my dad where the safe was and our money was, and they took him to go get that. When the realization of what was really happening hit my brother, he started to cry. And the man pointed the gun at my brother and told him to shut up. Of course, this didn't help whatsoever. It just made him cry even more. So then he pointed a gun at my mom, which I didn't want to be happening at the time. I just wanted to bury myself and to wake up from a bad dream. It was terrifying. And he told her to make him shut up. So she started to whisper to him, and he eventually did stop crying. And at this time, the two men who had taken my dad came back with my dad, and they told us to get up, and they took us into the bedroom where they tied my parents' arms behind their back, taking my dad's wedding ring in the process. So then they jogged out of the room, locked it, and almost instantly after that, my brother and I untied my parents, and we sat there for an hour while my parents tried to coax me to climb out the window because I was the only one who could fit through the bars to go get our gardener who had a house in the back of our house to come help. So after an hour or so, I finally decided to go. So I was climbing through the window, and I remember thinking, like, I didn't want to go. It was scary. I was thinking that they were there waiting for me, and I knew that they weren't, but you can't help but feel that when you're in that kind of a situation. So I jumped down from the windowsill. I ran around to the back of my house. I busted through his door, pretty much, and I got him, and I was speaking so frantically that it took him like a solid minute to understand what I was saying. Once he finally did, he and I ran to the back of the house, which the door was open. So we ran in, and they had left the key in the lock. And for some reason, this door only locked from the outside. You couldn't unlock it from the inside. I don't understand what the thinking was there, but for whatever reason, it did. So we unlocked the door. Almost instantly after that, my dad ran to the phone. He called the police, and when he was doing this, we asked our gardener, Gift, if he had known that there were people there. He said he had seen people walk to the front of the house, but he has just assumed that they were guests coming to visit us. So then the police arrived. They asked questions, you know, fingerprints, et cetera, whatever. And then we just kind of, we were all stunned. Like, we all knew that robbery happens, but like, you never think that it's going to happen to you. And my real takeaway from this was that I realized, like, now thinking back on my experience there, that like, you should spend as much time as you can with your family, because you never know when something like this will happen and they can get taken away from you. Thank you.
Now we have Emily Burnfield. Emily is always having birthdays that are unforgettable, but it's in the way you look at them if they are good or bad. Emily's title is Happy-ish Birthdays.
So growing up, for me, I would always have very interesting birthdays. My mom would plan things that she thought, oh, this is going to be so cool, but it wouldn't always go to plan. And growing up, my birthdays, I would look at them kind of as 1 year of my life gone away. I'm 1 year closer to the end of it. Even though I am very young still, I still kind of see it that way, and it's kind of sad. So starting with my fifth birthday, my mom decided to bring me to a nuns festival because she's just like, oh, that's pretty cool. We should do that. So I went to this nuns festival at this ginormous church, and it was during the time of Lent, so they didn't offer me any cookies or anything, and I was kind of sad about that. They were just eating like stale bread and cheese and staring at me from afar. So I was so excited that they were inviting me to do pottery with them, and I was sitting at a little wheel making my whatever it looked like. I don't know. It was a big blob of clay, and I was making this what I thought looked like a pot, but it was kind of warped to one side and had dents all over it. I was just like, this is going to be so cool. I'm going to paint it. It's going to look awesome. Me as a five-year-old, I was so proud of my work. Yeah. So I got it fired. And when it came back, I started painting it, and I was so excited because this was the most amazing thing that I had ever done. Me as a five-year-old, I made a clay pot for the first time, and it was glorious. So as I was picking it up, I dropped it on the floor, and it was sad, and I cried. And my mom said, it's okay, we can do something else sometime, maybe. So we drove home in the rain, and I cried. And yeah, that happened. So for my sixth birthday, my mom decided, you know what? I'm going to take her crystal hunting, and it's going to be awesome. So we went to this giant land place that looked like it had salt water there before because there was salt on the ground, but it had all dried up. So we were there to dig for crystals. And I had this ginormous shovel on my back, even though it was like twice as big as me. I was just like, I'm going to find some treasure. It's going to be awesome. So I started digging and digging and digging, and I found nothing. And I dug in the same spot for 4 hours and found absolutely nothing. And I didn't think to move 4 feet away where my siblings were, because they were finding all sorts of things, like crystals and everything. And I just kept digging in the same spot, digging in the same hole.
Yeah. And then it started to rain, and before I thought to move, we had to drive home because it started raining, and I was sad. And my siblings were just like, I'd give you one, but I found these. They're mine. So I cried going back home. It was kind of sad. So for my 7th birthday, my parents were just like, okay, let's go camping. Maybe this will turn out good. Yeah, that's what they thought. So we were going to Black Mesa, which is on the very edge of Oklahoma. And it's this huge black flat rock in the middle of nowhere. So we were driving there, and we were so excited, and I was excited that I was going to get to camp. And I saw these little eight-legged furry things on the ground, later known as tarantulas. And I started chasing them because I didn't know what they were. I thought they were cute. So I chased one, and I picked one up, and I brought it to my dad, and he ran away screaming. So I started setting up the tent after that sort of incident so he would kind of forget about that. And I started setting up the tent, and then it started to rain, and the tent was too wet to sleep in, so we had to sleep in the car. And it was really sad because I wanted to sleep under the stars, and it was sad. So later on that day, we had to drive back home. And driving home, even though I was still really sad about what happened because I was, like, crying in the car, and my mom tried to lighten the mood with a corny joke. Yeah. So there were these cows blocking the lanes, and we were stuck there. And we were in this huge red van. So the cows were just like, what is that thing? So my mom was just like, you know what? I'm going to narrate these cows, and it's going to be funny. That's what she thought. So she was just like, hey, Bill, what's that big red thing standing in the middle of the road? Maybe we should move. So I just cried more. Yeah. So by my 12th birthday, I realized there was a cycle to these birthdays. And I wanted to break the cycle. So I was just like, there was always something that happened on my birthdays that wasn't to plan. I would always cry because of something random that would happen. And something would always cause rain to happen. I mean, why is it always raining on my birthday? So on my 12th birthday, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to break this cycle. And it's going to be awesome. So I was like getting all ready. And I wanted to go camping and fishing. So I went to this campsite, and we started to go in this canoe, and we were fishing in a canoe, which is not a very good idea. So I had a fishing pole in the water. My mom was in front of me in the same canoe, and she had her phone out, looking at her phone. And then I knocked over the boat in the middle of the lake, and I lost my fishing pole, and my mom lost her phone. Yeah, and we were both cold in the water. Because, you know, so we went back to the campsite and started setting up the tent to try and forget about that little incident. And so I was setting up the tent, and I was so excited that we were going to finally sleep in a tent without it raining. And then it started raining. So I was really sad because my mom was just like, so it's too wet to sleep in. I'm sorry, we're going to have to sleep in the car again. So I was walking to the car, and I tripped over the unfinished tent and fell in the mud. And I was sad, and I was crying, you know. And I was just like, you know what? Okay, next birthday. Let's do this. Bring it on, universe. Yeah. It brought on. So for my 13th birthday, I was going to do something simple, and it was going to be awesome. So my parents are last-minute buyers, so they were out of the house buying me presents. And I was at home, alone. And I had the kitchen to myself. And I thought to myself, I'm going to make a cake, and it's going to be fabulous. So I was stirring, and I was putting chocolate chips in this mixture of whatever it was. And I poured it in a pan. And I put it in the oven, but forgot to set a time. So I just turned on the oven, and it stayed on. It just stayed on. So I walked away, and a few hours later, I smelled smoke coming from the kitchen. So
I heard the alarms starting to go off, and I walked in the kitchen, and it was on fire. So I was home alone with a kitchen on fire on my birthday. So I had to put out the fire by myself, and once I got the fire out, I opened the oven, and I realized most of the cake had survived. It's all good. I can fix this with a little bit of icing to cover up the mistakes, and then I dropped it on the floor. So I was sad. But, you know, that happened. So on my 14th birthday, I was just going to let whatever happened happen. So I decided I'm just going to have a simple party. And if I drop something on the floor or if something breaks, I'll just let it happen. So I was with all my friends. And one friend in particular came up to me and gave me a note. And on the note had a question that caught me by surprise. It said, "Will you go out with me?" And I took my friend outside and gave an answer. And it was the first time that I had said yes to an answer like that, to a question like that. And I was crying that day, not because of sadness, but because I was happy that something went right on my birthday. And it didn't rain. It was a nice sunshiny day, and it didn't rain. And that birthday was the final time that I had realized these birthdays... even though something would go wrong and it would have rained or something, it was not 1 year closer to death or something, 1 year of my life gone away. It was one memory that I could cherish for a long time, and it was 1 year closer to living. And I thought to myself, next year will be better. Thank you.
You have been listening to part 2 of Student Stories on Standing Room Only on WFHB. You've been listening to a series of stories told in early April by a group of students taught by Rachel Barr at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship. Their themes range from a grandmother mistaken for a witch to a middle school dance. In the second half of the show, we'll hear from Logan Kinzer, Luna DeCastro, Jake Smith, and Trinity Fleck. We now return to the show with Logan Kinzer and his story, You Better Belize It.
Logan is a freshman at the Academy who enjoys 80s music and spending time with his family, which includes his mom, dad, and younger brother. Logan's title is You Better Belize It.
When I was 10 years old, my dad told my mom, my brother, and I that he was ready to move. He wanted to retire and move to the Caribbean, which is what he had wanted to do his whole life. But brain tumor, kids, and self-employment had stopped him. But when you are 10 years old, however, you never really expect the big things to happen because they seem so far away. I never... expected to lose any of my grandparents or that I would ever get out of school because they seemed so far away, and I never expected us to move. 3 years ago, however, we took a trip to the Caribbean to find a place that the family would be willing to live. The trip was fun, and we found Belize. It had been a while since my dad had talked to the family about moving, so I was actually excited, getting to tell all my friends that I might be moving out of the country. The trip and our planning to move certainly made for a good story. When looking for a country to move to, our biggest issue was the language barrier. Belize, however, was a English-speaking country. It was beautiful. It was home to the world's second largest coral reef and the Belize Blue Hole, which is an underwater sinkhole. And scuba divers' dream. I liked Belize. I liked the food
and the beaches, but best of all was the pace of life. People there moved slower, which is my kind of speed. My friends would ask me about the move, and I'd give them all the same generic answer that we were planning on moving, just not anytime soon. I wasn't expecting on moving anytime soon, and I didn't realize that we were really moving until we took a second trip to Belize. And then my parents were ready to look for a house then, or property. But I was busy. I was meeting people and making friends. We played volleyball on the beach a few nights, and I went kayaking around the entire peninsula, which was about 6 miles. And I saw manatees and crocodiles in the lagoon and jellyfish and stingrays in the ocean. I was distracting myself from how fast things were moving, but I enjoyed Belize. And while I was there, I was ready to move, but it was not until I returned home that I realized why I didn't want to move. And at this point, I didn't know what I wanted. It was not until I started attending the academy, however, that I really didn't want to move. I was kind of struggling with my grades for the first time, and I did not want to transfer out of public school into homeschooling again. But my parents, they'd planned everything. They said most homeschooling programs are international, including IUs, which is what I had tried for a year. They said once you finish high school, you can come back to the United States to go to college or to get some extra schooling. And they had planned everything, but I still had minor concerns. But I realized, however, I was watching my dad get ready for the move. He was excited. He wasn't at all nervous. And I realized that I was complaining about little things that could easily be, we could easily find a solution for schooling and for work down there. And what I realized was that in being unwilling to try the move for at least a year, which is what my dad had wanted, I was being selfish. And I realized that everything he had been doing up to this point was for his family. And being willing to move and to try it out, I can't pay him back for what he's done, but this seemed like a pretty good start.
Next up, we have Luna DeCastro with her story, Gingerbread Escapade. Luna is an imaginative student who enjoys storytelling and her entire family, especially her grandparents. Luna.
Well, I learned to read at a really young age. And by the age of 5, I was reading books way beyond my reading level. And because I was an introvert, meaning since I had basically zero friends, I dwelled in these books. And I actually thought that I was the princess stuck in the tower or on the knight on a quest to save the kingdom. One of my favorite stories at the time was the story of Hansel and Gretel. And as some of you might know, Hansel and Gretel is a story of two siblings who go out venturing into the woods and they encounter this gingerbread house. Immediately, they start devouring this house and are interrupted by an old woman, the owner of the house, also known as the witch in this case, who locks them up in her house and forces Gretel to work as her slave, and her intention is to eat these kids. So anyway, one day, as this witch is preparing the oven to cook up these kids, Gretel decides to bravely push her into the oven. This story reminds me of my grandmother, because just like the witch in Hansel and Gretel, my grandmother always, and to this day, has sweets in her house. Her shelves are jam-packed with sugary treats. And it's like you can't get away from it. Like every corner you go, it haunts you. Anyway, one day, as I was getting ready to go to my grandparents' house, a realization suddenly dawned on me. and I started thinking about all the times that my grandmother had baked me cakes or cookies and had offered me sweets, and that's when it hit me. My grandmother was the witch from Hansel and Gretel, and I had to stop her. I had to defeat this witch. So I came up with a plan to save humanity. I was going to push her into the oven. At this point, my legs and arms were shaking so badly, but I continued. As I stepped into the car, my mind was going wild from all the possibilities of how this could go wrong. And as we made our way up her long, narrow driveway, the butterflies in my stomach kept getting worse and worse. And before I knew it, it was time to get out of the car. I took a deep breath as I got out of the car and walked up to her front door. Instantaneously, I was greeted by the nauseating smell of sugar. As I walked to the kitchen, I started thinking. My mind was racing again with all the thoughts of everything that could happen, and I thought I was going to throw up. And that's when I saw her, the witch. And she was she waved at me quickly, but she was busy putting something in the oven. So I crept up to her from behind and put my sweaty palms on her back, and I pushed as hard as I could. But that didn't work, because even if I was strong enough to push my grandmother anywhere, which I wasn't, there was no way that she would have ever fit into that oven. But I didn't know that. So 5-year-old me ran. And conveniently, I happened to pass a closet, and I flung the closet door open, and I hopped in. And the closet was damp and warm and kind of smelled like mold, but don't tell my grandmother I said that, because she'd probably kill me for saying that. And then without warning, the door flung open, and there she was standing in front of me. I could see the hunger in her eyes as she dragged me out of that closet. And at that moment, I thought I was going to die. I knew I was going to die. She was going to kill me. It was over. But she got distracted, and I obviously didn't die. And I had the opportunity to run. And just as I was heading towards the backyard, I noticed my cousins sitting on the couch. So I ran up to them, pack, immediately. And I explained the whole thing. I explained how our grandmother was a witch and how she was planning on killing us. And they just looked at me for a minute. And I started crying. And I didn't even know what to do, because they didn't understand me. And I couldn't understand why they weren't running and panicking like I was. But like any reasonable person would have done in that situation, they tried to calm me down and told me that her grandmother wasn't a witch. Unconvinced, I ran towards our backyard. And I remember seeing my grandmother walking out behind me. And I remember thinking that she was charging after me. And I honestly thought she was a witch. And I honestly thought I was going to die. So in a moment of utter despair, I kicked her as hard as I could. And she looked up at me with this face of surprise, but not the kind of, hey, you just threw me a birthday party, I'm so happy kind of surprise, but what the heck is wrong with you? Why did you just kick me? What is wrong with you? Kind of surprised. And as my grandmother limped back to the house, I came to a realization. I still had to defeat the witch. So quickly, I concocted another plan to defeat her. I decided that I was gonna poison her. So, in full ninja mode, I tiptoed to the kitchen. And conveniently, I saw this bowl of cake mix just lying on the counter. So now all I needed was poison. I scrambled through shelves and drawers, but I didn't find any, because my grandparents were smart and didn't leave poison laying around where pesky children like me could have found it. But I still had to defeat the witch, so I decided I would make my own poison with some hot sauce I found and some dirt. So I dumped all of this into the bowl, and I realized I was exhausted. After all that witch hunting, I needed a nap. So I went into the backyard and took a nap. And I was I woke up with the sound of screaming because turns out my grandmother had no intentions of eating the cake. She was just doing that grandmotherly thing and baking her grandkids a cake. So my cousin ended up eating the cake. And although it was not poison and it wouldn't have killed anyone unless you were allergic to hot sauce or dirt, it probably burned her tongue and her throat a lot because she was crying. And I remember being furious because I thought that my grandmother knew that it was poison and she had purposely tried to poison my cousin. So I decided I was gonna face her. And I went in the kitchen and started screaming. Well, now you must be thinking, this girl's crazy. This couldn't get possibly any worse. But trust me, it does. So after making a fuss and alarming everyone, I realized that my grandmother probably wasn't a witch. Probably. So I did the logical thing and I ran away, which lasted for about 5 seconds until I realized that I was hungry. So I went back to my grandparents and I was crying so badly at this point that I think my grandmother took pity on me and forgot what a brat I was because in an attempt to make me feel better, she decided to let me feed her fish. But let me tell you a thing about fish. Fish have basically zero self-control. So if you feed them anything, they will eat it until it's gone, even if that results in their death. So, but I didn't know that. So while my grandmother was doing something else, I decided to dump that entire pot of fish food into their bowl. And they did exactly that. They ate until they exploded and died. So, and one day, I managed to kill all my grandparents' fish, and I attempted murder twice. And that's what I love most about my grandmother, because I was a crazy child. I really was. I mean, you just heard that. And I put her through the wildest things, and she still loves me unconditionally. And I am also extremely grateful that my grandparents don't keep poison anywhere near where I could have found it, because if not, the story would have gone a whole lot differently.
Next up is Jake Smith. The title of his story is My Family's Reunion. Jake is a 15-year-old pessimist who was born in Bloomington, Indiana. He likes to watch The Simpsons and Dateline while eating ice cream and Doritos. Jake.
Okay, so I was raised in a large family, and as I was growing up, I was taught to believe that blood was thicker than water. My family held large reunions every year with 50-plus people. We all came together just to catch up with one another. They were kind of meant to show, like, the power of our family and how we, like, stuck together. However, they were always kind of awkward, especially for me, because not all of us knew each other, and we didn't really have a common bond other than just we got together every year. Our reunions were very ritualistic. We did the same thing year after year. So we went to Brown County National Park every year. We had KFC with watermelon every year, and we got to play on this slide that was way too hot every year. And afterwards, we always went to a pool. And so they were also held in the first Sunday in August, which school started the next week. So growing up, I was very proud of my family. My grandpa had a family business that I was to inherit one day. And, my cousins and I got to go to Gulf Shores over winter break, and I would always brag about that. And so any chance I had, I would basically brag about my family. And so one day, I was at school, I was in first grade, and I had forgotten my lunch, and I had no lunch money, so I was super embarrassed. I went to the office, and I called my mom, and she said that she'd be there, she'd bring me a lunch. And I just expected her to, like, come with, like, a packed lunch and, like, give me a kiss, which would be, like, super embarrassing. The situation was only made worse when I learned that we were eating outside that day. So I hated eating outside because it was hot all the time, and the bugs would get in your food. So I'm sitting outside and I'm moping and I'm just kind of sitting there just waiting for something embarrassing to happen. And so then I hear this large car engine, like a loud noise. And I look up and through the chain link fence, I see a red Mustang. And I look in the window and it's my grandma. And she has a pizza for me. My grandma bought me pizza and drove it to me in a red Mustang. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And my head must have been huge because everyone was saying, oh, wow, your grandma's so cool. And that just made me really proud of her. And so anytime someone would mention their grandma, I would say, oh, what does your grandma drive, you know? And they'd respond. They'd be like, oh, she drives a Lincoln or whatever, some old car. And I would say, well, my grandma drives a red Mustang GT convertible. And I was just really proud of that. And so after school, she picked me up too. And she said, did I look cool or what? And I was just so proud to have a cool grandma. And so my family reunions, the main reason we went there is because of my great-grandpa. And he was our patriarch. So over the years, his health declined, and eventually he passed away. So people started slowly not showing up, and it kind of trickled out. And then eventually my great-grandmother, she moved away, and everyone just kind of stopped coming. And so nowadays, they're not the same as they were. We have burgers instead of KFC with no watermelon. We don't go to Brown County National Park. We don't get to play on the slide, and we don't get to go to the pool afterwards. I kind of realized that this had something to do with how the awkwardness, we didn't really know each other, and we didn't really have a common bond. And this kind of just stuck with me about why this happened. It was kind of a weird thing for me. So I had a cousin on my father's side of the family, and he committed suicide. So we were so distraught. This was like a really sad time, and my family could barely look at each other. It was just very sad. But we went to my uncle's house up in Indianapolis, and we basically had like a five-day event where just countless people came in, and they all shared prayers and memories about what they remembered about my cousin. And then at his funeral, there were at least 300 people there. There was hundreds of people there, and a lot of them were family. But as I looked around, I noticed a lot of them I didn't recognize, and a lot of them didn't even really know him. They were just there to support their friends and family that were going through a hard time. And this really spoke to me. I realized that they were there just supporting someone that they loved. And I thought, you know, if I had a funeral, how many people would be there? And how many people would be there just to support their friends? So, okay, so he had a twin sister. And so after this time, you know, we decided to, well, we'd always been close. I'd grown up around her. But we kind of drifted apart over the years. She lived in Indy. We lived in Bloomington. So, you know, didn't really get to talk very often. But we were still cousins. We were still family. But it was just kind of, we weren't as close as we were before. And so after this happened, we decided, my family and I, to go to her house every other month just to kind of be supportive, you know. And now I love going there. It's great. My cousin-in-law, he has an arcade system with 10,000 classic games. He's in IT, so he can do that kind of computer stuff. And then my cousin, she loves gardening, and she has a fig tree. And I had never had figs before, but now I love figs. And she likes to make large breakfast for us every time I go there. And then we stay up late by the campfire. And so I realized kind of that we had become closer now that we're close because we actually spent time with one another, and that's what mattered. It didn't matter what the title show was. It mattered what the title showed, and that was that we were together. So I kind of realized, I had this realization all of a sudden, that blood isn't thicker than water. It's not true. My family reunions fell apart just because we didn't have a common bond. We were still family, but they didn't last. My grandma and I were brought together just by idea of being cool. And my cousin, at his funeral, there were just hundreds of people that came together to support people they loved and someone that they had loved. And so my cousin and I were brought closer just because we spent time with one another and we loved each other. So I realized that no matter what a relationship is, family or friend, it has to be built up and maintained to last. Thank you.
Next up, we're going to have Trinity Fleck with her story, Dancing It Out. Trinity is a 14-year-old who was born in Washington and has traveled to many other states. She now resides in Indiana and is currently obsessed with Grey's Anatomy. Trinity.
Okay, sorry. So we all know that middle school dances were and probably still are undeniably horrible. But here's the thing. Me and middle school dances had this true love-hate relationship. When the first school dance rolled around, I was so hyped up. I begged my friends to go to the dance with me. And to be truthful, this only happened once, because after my first school dance, I never wanted to go to another one. But I still would, because my friends would push and pry, and I would eventually give in. So, when I was getting ready for my first school dance, I was over the moon with excitement. I had gotten brand spanking new flats and this long, flowy sheer blue dress from Kohl's. And it actually fit because the clothes I wore in middle school were three sizes too big and not a good idea. My family offered to help with my hair and makeup, but I was a strong, independent woman who could do it myself, which was, once again, a mistake. My foundation was three shades too dark, really old and clumpy. My mascara was a hand-me-down, and it turned my fine, long lashes into thick, creepy, crawly spider legs. And my eyeliner application was even worse. At the time, I was using liquid eyeliner. And also, when you have hooded eyelids, eyeliner is such a bad idea unless it's your top waterline. And I didn't know that. So here I am. I'm laying on these thick, shaky black lines all across my eyelids, thus giving me black holes for eyes. Now we're moving on to hair. I had this horribly done pixie cut from Grey Clips, and it was growing out, so I had a mullet. And I straightened that sucker out as much as I could and tried to style it as Bob. And I mean, I thought it worked. And I went downstairs and I showed my mom, and she was like, "Oh my God, honey, grab the camera. We need pictures." After like 101 pictures, my mom finally walks me down to the dance, and I say my farewells so quickly because all I wanted to do was dance to the cha-cha slide. And I got my ticket and I walked into the cafeteria, and it was one of those like Hallmark movie magic moments where the person like throws their arms out and like spins in a big circle and like enjoys everything around them. And that's exactly what I did, but I broke out of my trance as soon as I heard these girly little squeals coming from the dance floor because Justin Bieber's Beauty and the Beat just came on. So I took my seat. I was only dancing to the cha-cha slide, and if any other dance like that came on, I would be up there. And the cha-cha slide eventually came on, and do you know how low I could go? I could bring it to the floor and bring it to the top like I never even stopped. Now, my first middle school dance went pretty well. I made some new friends, but it was these friendships that sent my middle school experience down a rabbit hole. Go figure. Why does middle school have to be so middle school? Okay, now the second school dance has been announced. It's a Valentine's Day dance. All my friends had dates, and me being that stereotypical dork with glasses, I didn't have a date. And I wasn't one of those people that could like whip off my glasses from like a 90s or 80s movie and just turn into this like beautiful model. No, that wasn't me. So I didn't have a date, and I didn't want to go to that dance. So now it's the night of the dance, and I'm at home with my mom, my dogs, watching some TV in these blue jeans, white shirt, and a jacket, and I get a phone call. So I answer it, and it's my friends. They're like, "Come outside. Now." I get up. I go outside. "You're coming to the dance." "No, I'm not." "Yes, you are." "Oh, no." And this goes on for a little while. And they offer to pay me and get me some snacks. And I said, "Oh, I like snacks. I like eating away my feelings." So I call inside. I go, "Mom, going to the dance now." She gives me a nod, letting me leave, and I leave. And I'm starting to feel super anxious because my friends are already, like, skipping around, talking about their boyfriends and how excited they are to see them. But they, like, promised me to, like, dance with me because that's the only reason they wanted me there, to dance with me. And I'm just not feeling so good anymore. And 20 minutes later, we make it to the dance, and I feel so frantic and, like, a dark cartoon cloud formed over my head. And I grab onto this hand railing, and I try to tell my friends, and they're like, "No, they were not going to let me leave. They forced me off this hand railing, marched me straight inside, and bought me that ticket." I'm standing in the cafeteria now, and I just watch my friends just wander off, go find their boyfriends, and I'm already alone. And I find myself sitting next to someone that punched me in the eye 2 years prior with an umbrella. I didn't really like talking to them, so I would just buy myself snacks and eat them and mind my own business, and the cha-cha slide never came on, nor the Cupid Shuffle, so I just sat there that whole Valentine's Day dance, doing nothing but eating away my feelings. The last solo dance comes on, and I hear this announcement that all the snacks are 50% off, and ooh, I still had money. I was getting myself some more snacks. I got 2 cupcakes, some chips, and I text my mom. We already had a pickup spot. And I'm leaving. And it's dark. And there's no lamppost because Bachelor does not like lamps. There's cars parked in the crosswalk. And there's no one coming. So I look both ways and I'm like, okay. And I bolt across the street. And someone decided not to turn their lights on yet. And bang, I was hit by the car. I dropped all my snacks, lost one of my shoes. So I run to my mom. I open that car door and I go, Mom? And she's like, why? I'm like, I think I just got hit by a car. She's like, what just happened? And I was like, yeah. And like her face flushed like Snow White and filled with fiery pits of red. And a few cuss words slipped from her mouth before she got out of this car and marched me straight back down to the school. And we stood there because I guess it's really not okay to leave the scene of a car wreck. I didn't know that. I was in middle school. And this nice little classmate brings me my shoe and chips, but not the cupcakes because they were ruined. and then paramedics came and checked me out. Like, there were so many cops and ambulances, like 6 people caught. I only know one real caller, but that doesn't matter. I got checked out and I was completely and utterly terrified. I had road rash all up the side of my body and face, and I couldn't walk because of the like soreness and shock afterwards. But the only thing that was severely injured was my ego when I went back to school. But just take it from me. Look both ways before you middle school.
You've been listening to a series of stories told in early April by a group of students taught by Rachel Barr at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship. Stories this week came from Dylan Stickles, Willow Krugel, Scott Pollock, Emily Burnfield, Logan Kinzer, Luna DeCastro, Jake Smith, and Trinity Fleck. Their themes ranged from dealing with a robbery in Zambia to mistaking a grandmother for a witch. The commonality was that each storyteller learned something new.
You've been listening to Standing Room Only. Join us each week for on-location recordings of lectures, town hall meetings, and other public forums. If there's a particular event you'd like to hear broadcast on this program, email that information to us directly at news@wfhb.org. The Standing Room Only archive is available online at wfhb.org/news. Standing Room Only is a production of our volunteer-powered news and public affairs department here on Community Radio, WFHB.